the month of November. You believe this is November? Well, it feels like November out there, doesn't it? In the month of November is one of the great times of the year, October, November, when we see the leaves changing colors, but the cold we don't really care for the older we get. But I'm going to turn this on. I'm sorry, Jeff. Jeff's
standing at attention. I thought he was respecting me, but no, he's just, no.
But I was thinking this November, and a lot of folks will put things every day. They'll try to think of something maybe in their home, maybe you have a chart or something, and you have the kids think of something every day that you're thankful for. This is a month of thankfulness. It ought to be a month of thankfulness, and we think of Thanksgiving. So I thought every Sunday in this month, we're going to preach on something I'm most thankful for. My list is rather long list. I'm not going to be able to get through all of them, but last week I shared the one that I was the most thankful for. And just looking over the list again, and I won't go over all of it, one of them jumped out to me as I read through most of the list last week, and I was going to preach on one of them. I actually was going to preach on heaven this morning, the hope of heaven, the reality of heaven. And the one that caught my attention, of course, this is Veterans Day weekend. And I just couldn't help but to spend a lot of extra time this week. And God just stirred me to preach a message on this subject this morning. I'm thankful for our freedom. Thankful for America. Aren't you grateful for America? Aren't you grateful for the freedom that we have today? And tomorrow is Veterans Day. And Veterans Day is one of those holidays that just kind of, many people just kind of slips by. And we don't think a lot of it. But I'm thankful for America. I'm going to give you some things this morning that we're not necessarily going to give you an outline of the passage of Scripture. And of course, I think of many verses in the Bible when I think of America. And verse number 12 was one that immediately comes to mind in Psalm 33. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, and the people whom He hath chosen for His own inheritance. We got in on a great blessing by being born in this country. We never really, I don't think we will fully understand that till we get to heaven. I'm not sure if we'll fully understand it even then. How fortunate we are. And I want to say some things, and I want to make sure that you take these the right way, but don't mistake patriotism for spirituality. Did you catch that? I'm grateful for the revival, if you will call it, of patriotism that I've seen in my lifetime. I was brought up during the Vietnam era. I was too young to really understand what was going on, but patriotism was not a part of my life when I was young, I'm sad to say. And I'm grateful for the revival that we've seen of patriotism, but don't mistake that for a spiritual revival. And no matter what you read or what you hear, and Christians of all people ought to understand this, but I'm amazed at how many Christians never really get this. Being a good soldier or dying on the battlefield, or being a public servant or dying in the cause of duty, or being a religious or moral person and maybe even giving your life to help others, sacrificing yourself to others, does not get you a free pass to heaven. Did you get that? A lot of folks never really catch that. The only way to heaven is through Jesus Christ, through the new birth. There is no salvation outside of Him. Now, living or dying a certain way does not cause or grant anybody immediate salvation or an exemption from the wages of sin, which is eternal death. Now, my heart is grateful, and I want you to understand this. I'm grateful, and my heart's broken for those who have given themselves. Oftentimes given their wealth, given their families, given up their family, or their lives, or their sacred honor for the cause of our freedom. I'd never want to take away that honor that's due to them. You understand what I'm saying this morning? And
Someone, and I read this often, I read it a couple of times already this week. I'm sure I'll see it quite a few times even tomorrow on Veterans Day. I hear it read just about every Memorial Day at a service that I go to somewhere for in honoring the fallen and Memorial Day. And it says a veteran. What is a veteran? A veteran, whether active duty, discharge, retired, or reserve, is someone who at one point in his life wrote a blank check made payable to the United States of America for the amount of and up to and including his life. That's a good definition of a veteran. In fact, I want to do this. How many of you this morning are here today that are veterans? I want to, go ahead and stand up. Stand up. All the veterans, stand up. I want to thank you. Rex can't stand up, but we'll do a hand raise from him. That's all right. He can, but it might take, by the time we're done, he might get all the way up. But that's okay. Thank you, veterans. God bless you. Give him a hand, all right? In fact, I was thinking of this, not only the veterans, but the families of veterans that have sacrificed so much, their wives, their children, or some have lost sons and daughters on the battlefield, fighting for our freedom. I'm thankful to be an American. I'm thankful and honored whenever I'm in the presence of a veteran. Friday, I was visiting Brother Chet. He's not able to be here this morning, but he's a veteran. He was wearing a hat that said, Veteran of the United States Navy World War II, I believe is what the hat said. And I'm always honored to be in the presence of a veteran. But I got thinking, and I can't help but to think this, who was it that built America? Who gave us our freedom that we enjoy today? There's actually, I narrow it down to five groups that define who America is. This is more of a patriotic talk than a message, I guess, this morning, but we'll just warn you up front, all right? Each of these five groups that I've classified is necessary and often misunderstood and unappreciated by the other group. I love history, and I love to read especially of the settling of the Western part of the United States during the Revolutionary Era. And the Western United States during the Revolutionary Era is where you and I live right now. In fact, when we did the house next door, we found an old newspaper crumpled up in the wall, the Chicago Tribune from 1889, I believe was the date on the head of it. And it said underneath the heading, the Chicago Tribune, the largest paper distributed in the West. That was the West back then. I love to read of things of this era. So I may get a little bit geeky to some of you. I don't know this morning. But the major battles that took place during the Revolutionary War were in the East, but the war was literally won in the West. I read enough to understand that. And by the way, the same thing is true of the Civil War. That's why Ulysses S. Grant was successful and Lincoln was successful, because he realized the war is going to be won in the West, not what goes on in the East and the major battlefields that history writes about today. I love reading history because, and I don't want to dwell on this, but history shows us the real depravity of man. And war does that. It constantly reminds us that the world is digressing while we want to believe that it's progressing. Hello? Now, we don't, and because of that, history is not taught very much today. Instead, we've replaced it with social studies. Now, the difference is social studies tells us that we are progressing towards some type of utopia, or as the hippies used to sing, the age of Aquarius. We're going towards that. In order to do that, we've got to deny the reality or rewrite. That's a hard word to get out for people like me. To rewrite history to fit in our agenda that things are getting better and better when reality says they're getting worse and worse. Now, I want to focus on these five groups that built America, that define us as America, that makes America unique from all the nations of the world.
both present and the past. Number one, the abused and the less fortunate. The abused and the less fortunate. The original settlers. Now, I know somebody's gonna want to raise your hand, but hold on, all right? The original European settlers, we'll put it that way, that came to America, they came here fleeing from something. They were abused, and they were less fortunate where they lived in Europe. They came fleeing oppression and persecution, mostly for their religious views. Now, when I was a kid, we used to read about these people at this time of year. We kind of, in modern days, have kind of forgotten about them. They're no longer important in our culture today because we don't want history anymore. Their true story is seldom heard. I was just looking at it again this morning. I've never been there personally. I've been to New York a couple of times, but I've never been. Some of you I know have been to the Statue of Liberty. The Statue of Liberty was given to us by France. There's a picture. I've seen pictures of it. I've read it. I think I've got it written in the front of... I'm using different Bibles all the time. I don't think it's written in the front of this Bible. But I've got it written in the front of one of my Bibles, the poem written by Emma Lazarus at the base of the Statue of Liberty. The poem is called The New Colossus. And it reads this. Some of you might recognize this. It's written in 1883. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gate shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is an embrazened lightning, with her name Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities fame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to be free, the wretched refuge of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift up my lamp beside the golden door. And I thought, that's America. That most of us that are here today have ancestors, maybe a few generations removed from them. The closest I have was my grandfather on my mother's side came here from Sweden. And most of us are European descent that are here this morning. And our ancestors came here seeking freedom because they were abused. They were less fortunate. They were seeking something better than what they had. And under that abused and less fortunate, we could include those that Charles Darwin, the inventor of modern racism. Did you catch that? Charles Darwin, the inventor of, he didn't write the origin of, he called it the origin of the species, but it really could rightly be called the origin of racism. It didn't really originate with him. He was popularized by him. The abused and the less fortunate would include the Native Americans. We call them Indians. I don't know what the politically correct term is now, and I really don't care what it is. But they were called Indians. They were called savages. They were called the red man. And by the way, these people were pagan. They were without God. I know today they're glorified, but they were very immoral. They were very ruthless. They were a godless culture. They're very satanic in many of their actions. And I know that's not a popular thing to say, and I know that folks are going to be upset because I even said the obvious, but I've done a lot of study and a lot of reading on the real history of the Indians, and most of us have got that whitewashed because we've been trained by Disney instead of by reality, but I won't get into that right now. Their customs are strange to us. And I'm tempted to go into some of them, but I'm not going to have time right now. Some of the customs they had were bizarre to us. Some of them far better and unusual. Maybe some of their customs, in a sense, are more biblical than some of our customs. And they didn't even have a Bible. They didn't know the God of the Bible. Because of our ideas of evolution, and which where racism came to, we thought that they were an inferior people. Many people did.
Their idea of land ownership was completely... How could anybody own land? They couldn't comprehend that. And family relationships are something that was not important, meaningful to them. But I will say that they were... the way that they treated their women, you would have been better off to be a dog in their camp than a woman in their camp. And by the way, they ate their dogs. But they treated them better than their women. Now, that's just reality. And again, I'm tempted to go on, but I won't go on any farther than that. But they weren't the innocent, quote-unquote, guardians of the land that we're taught that they were today in our culture. They were worshipers of nature, of spiritism and Satanism. But I will say this. One of the reasons I'm grateful to be a Baptist because of the way our Baptist forefathers treated the Indians. Rather than trying to eliminate them, they thought, we need to win them to Jesus Christ. Hello? Again, I read enough history to see this, and it's as clear as can be if you actually read history. But there's much to be learned when we see the two cultures collide united together. And then another group of people, again, brought us to the hero of modern so-called science, Charles Darwin, the origin of the racism, is the slaves that were mistreated and abused, and sometimes they were treated worse than animals as well. And I won't go any farther into that, but those were the abused, the unfortunate. And it is interesting. I'll say one more thing about them. All these were hated and persecuted by religion. Isn't that interesting? The religious leaders were the ones that persecuted, just like they persecuted our Baptist forefathers. We'll get to them in a little bit. These are the abused and the less fortunate. That's what makes up America. And then secondly, and what we were taught in history, these are the ones that you saw the most of. I would call them the visionaries. The visionaries. I read a biography this year of Thomas Jefferson. And I read a lot about him, but I want to read a biography that's written directly about him. Amazing character. He was what I would classify as a bookworm. He liked to write about things, but didn't really, what I would consider, do a lot. He was a writer, but he didn't do a lot of work necessarily with his hands. He was a visionary. He was a politician. Of course, we remember him as the author of the Declaration of Independence, as the third president of the United States. Now, Thomas Jefferson was not a saved man, by everything that I can read. I liken him in the Bible characters biblically to the Sadducees. He was called himself a deist. He believed there was a God, but we couldn't personally know that God. In fact, I'm told that he rewrote the Bible because he didn't believe any of the miracles or anything supernatural, much like the Sadducees of Jesus' day, that he took all that out of the Bible. He was not a saved man. Thomas Jefferson, as much as he admired and longed to be one, he was not a soldier. As much as he admired and longed to be one, he was not a pioneer. But he was a visionary, and we owe a lot to men like him. And I'm just using him as one of many examples I could use today. But I'll say this, visionaries are necessary. Politicians, as much as we don't want to say this, politicians are necessary. What? I knew I wouldn't get any amens there. I'm glad nobody threw any hymn books at me or anything. But they are necessary. And he was a politician, no question about it. Now it's best if a politician is grounded in the Word of God, which is the source of truth. But he had a respect toward the Word of God, but he didn't believe all of the Word of God personally. Now, many did, but he was not one of them that did.
the problem that we see in America today and politics in general is there is no moral foundation. He did, though he didn't believe salvation through the person of Jesus Christ, he did believe the moral absolutes of this book right here. And that was recognized as the foundation for America. So visionaries are important. And then the third one that we recognize and we honor today and this weekend as Veterans Day tomorrow, I'll simply call them the warriors. The warriors. I think each one of these is necessary to have the America that we have today. The warriors. Without the warriors, the visionaries' works are in vain. No one would carry out the ideas that they had. And one of these such warriors, again, a biography, I thoroughly enjoy this. I hear all about him, but I thought I just want to read a biography to understand more about him. I don't know if the name means, and we weren't taught much about him in history, and he's kind of a forgotten character in history, but if it wasn't for him, Illinois would not be a state. And that's why I kind of sparked my interest in reading about him. A man named George Rogers Clark. Does anybody know who he is? He was a soldier. He was what the media would have a heyday with him today, and he is the picture. He would be the poster child of what we would call a warmonger today. He loved a good fight. He lived for a good fight. In fact, the biography was called I Glory in War. That's what he lived for. That's the only thing that matters. Just, I want to be in a war somewhere. I don't care where it is. He was, I guess you could call him a mercenary. His loyalty was in question. Now again, think of the time that he lived during the Revolutionary War. His loyalty sometimes was to England. His loyalty sometimes was to Spain. His loyalty sometimes was to France. His loyalty sometimes was to the colonists. Now, eventually, he sided with the colonists. But he was kind of bounced back and forth. He just wanted to be in a good war somewhere. That's all he lived for. That's all he cared about. He didn't care about the visionaries. He didn't care about the abused or the less fortunate. But he just wanted a good war. That's just who he was. And by the way, these people are necessary for America to be what we are. He is known for, I mentioned he conquered what became the Illinois Territory, where Kaskaskia was the main settlement, that he overthrew that settlement without even a shot. He was fighting a big battle. He was disappointed because there was no battle. The people were glad to see him when he showed up. He was expecting to kill them off, but they were glad to welcome him. And that became the capital of Illinois. In his day when it later became a state. And you might not know George Rogers Clark, but you probably have heard of his younger brother named William Clark. But war is, whether we want to admit it or not, war is, as much as we despise war, and I've never been involved in a war. I have a gun that my dad got in World War II that was carried by German infantrymen, and every time I shoot that thing, I can't imagine shooting this at a person or having this thing shot at me or let alone carrying it out in a battlefield. That thing weighs as much as a small child. War, as terrible as it is, and though sometimes we tend to glorify it, it is, I guess, at best we could say it's a necessary evil. Without war, we wouldn't have the freedom that we have today. And without the warriors, and we honor our veterans this weekend, but they were one part that made America what it is and are preserving our freedoms today. We still need visionaries. We still have those that are abused and less fortunate. By the way, we could go on a number of those groups today. And I know everybody likes to be a victim of something today, whether they are or not, but there are many that are abused and less fortunate. I can't help but to think of the children, the babies that we're murdering by the millions in America. By the way, God's going to hold us accountable to that. God knows every one of them by name. He knows every hair on their head. He knows every detail. He hears every heartbeat that while they're in their mother's womb. And we can go ahead. I don't want to go that direction right now, okay? But the warriors. And then this is my
Well, the last two are my favorite groups. One of them I dreamed to be a part of, but I never could be. I realize I would not be alive today if I was a part of this group. But the other one, I am one. And that is, fourthly, the pioneers. The pioneers. I'm talking about Meriwether Lewis or William Clark, the Lewis. And again, if you want to understand what Native American Indians were truly like, I'd encourage you to read some of their writings. And you'll find out the truth of what we call Indians were really like. And it's not the storybook picture and not the common picture that you're given today. I love to read of Daniel. He is my hero, Daniel Boone. Oh, boy. Well, I haven't took the kids, as Daniel, his home said, where he died. Spent the last 20 or so years of his life on our teen trip this year. And Davy Crockett, boy, he is a fun guy. I'm reading a biography of him, and that's just so much fun to read. He was a character. I'm just having so I keep going back and rereading because it's so much fun to read the way he worded things. But these are pioneers. They're explorers, they're hunters and trappers. They lived a rugged life, to say the least. I, as much as I admire what they did, I realize I couldn't last a week living like they lived. As much as I enjoy, and most people, if you even had any idea, you probably wouldn't last 5 minutes. I don't know, but I might get in a week before it's time to put it into it. These folks made America. They gave us that daring spirit of doing the impossible. They said it can't be done. Well, we'll do it anyways. We'll defy all odds, and we will do it. And we'll just live in a way that they say is impossible to live. They step outside the box in every area of their life. The pioneers, without that pioneering spirit, America would not be what they are today. So we've got the abused and the fortunate and the unfortunate, the visionaries, the warriors, the prisoners, and then lastly, the preachers. The preachers. French philosopher visited America and looked at all that America had to offer. He was in quest to find out what makes America great. And at the end of his, I think he spent a couple of years studying everything he could find about America and said that the one thing that makes America great is because America is good. And he made this statement, if America ever ceases to be good, America will cease to be great. Wow, that's very true there. I think of men like John Clark, and we had a John Clark. His picture's on the wall. His picture's not on the wall. We don't have a picture. He was a founder of Rhode Island, I mentioned some things about John Clark a few weeks ago, that he is literally the author of what we call religious liberty today. And it's engraved in the Rhode Island State House this is an experiment in religious liberty. And by the way, it worked good for well over 200 years. He was a Baptist preacher. He was an attorney. He was a well-known doctor. And some folks say, well, Baptists, they're just a bunch of uneducated fools. He was one of the most educated men of his day. And he gave us this idea of total or put the first one responsible for making it literally a law of any area in the world of total religious liberty. I heard said this week by a secular news commentator that our Constitution was an experiment. Now, it would have been good if he would have just stopped there. But he kept going and said, our Constitution was a political experiment that has failed. Our Constitution has not failed. We've just failed our Constitution. It was given to us with the influence of many great preachers. This idea of religious, not just religious toleration. Other countries have done that. Let's have religious freedom. Let's have an experiment and see what happens with that. Let's have a constitution that gives equal rights to the people. Of course, there were still some abused and less fortunate people in colonial America. But these men made up America. This is what made America. I'm talking about men like Schubel Starnes. Without him, we would have no Bible Belt in the South, as it's sometimes called. We would have no political, conservative base in America if it wasn't for that Baptist preacher from North Carolina. I'm talking about men, and this is one of the men that I loved because I like to study the history of that era in this particular region of the country, John Mason Peck. John Mason Peck, who was a great pioneer. He was also a Baptist preacher. He was a writer and an educator. He started many different colleges and training institutions for preachers, encouraged many preachers to come out to the West, which would have been Kentucky and Illinois, in Indiana and Ohio, to establish churches and establish schools, was very influential in this area. And I could go on, but I'm just going to say that America was, at one time, and it'd be hard to refute this, that America was the gospel lighthouse of the world. Did you catch that? America was not only a center for freedom in the world, but it was the God. And I believe that's why God raised up America, to be the gospel lighthouse of the world. And there was a time that missionaries were sent all over the world from America. Men who would willingly give their life. My wife was telling a story, a true story, of Through Gates of Splendor. I don't know if any of you heard of that book. Some of our teenagers are down there listening to it. Wow, who is this? Of these people that willingly gave their lives to try to win a savage Indian tribe to Jesus Christ. And they were literally speared to death. Because of their sacrifice, many missionaries surrendered. And they increased the light of the gospel around the world by their sacrifice. I was thinking of a song this morning. I was going to sing it, but I'm just going to read the words because I think you maybe will catch the meaning more if we just read the words. Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountains, majesties above the fruited plains. America, America, God shed His grace on thee and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. O beautiful for pilgrim feet whose stern impassioned stress and through a thoroughfare of freedom beat across the wilderness. America, America, God mend thine every flaw. And by the way, only God can mend America's every flaw. That's why God's people need to learn to pray instead of trying to push their politics or whatever. Confirm thy soul in self-control and liberty and law. Oh, beautiful for heroes proved in liberating strife, who more than self their country loved and mercy more than life. America, America, my God, may God thy gold refine till all success be nobleness and every gain divine. Our modern heroes and all these head apart. I'm grateful for every one of them. I know we recognize the warriors this week. Don't forget the abused and the less fortunate that made America what we are. The visionaries, the warriors, the pioneers, and the preachers. I think of and by the way, all these are still around today. They all still define America. I think of folks, and of course, this is a category that I fit in, and a lot of folks don't understand. Some of us grew up in religion, but we didn't have salvation. And we decided religion ain't going to get us anywhere and decided life isn't worth living anymore, but then we found Jesus. Amen? And what a difference He's made. It's not religion, but it's salvation in the person of Jesus Christ. And we're so grateful to have that, that we said, God, this is no longer my life. It's Yours. All my dreams, all my desires, everything, I've not only signed, and I read the definition of a veteran, and I've not only signed away my life to the government for a short time, but for the rest of my life. God, I don't care. In fact, when I signed up, I intended to die somewhere for the cause of Christ. I'd be glad to do it. And I've signed a lifelong commitment to Jesus Christ. I think, I'm nobody. I'm nobody special, but I just decided that that's where God's put me and that's what God has called me to do. I think of a dear missionary friend, somebody that I knew as a young Christian. They'd been saved a little longer than me. I came to know him in my home church and found out after visiting with him and going out, knocking on doors with him and sharing the gospel with him and learning to be a soul winner with him. He was actually in Bible college at the time. And I brought him home one time. I said, I don't even know where you live. I need to run you home, or I need to pick him up at his house. He said, oh, I lived down at the YMCA in a glorified homeless shelter. That is what it is. He literally had nothing. And I didn't realize that he, not too long ago, had a very high-paying job. That he said, I don't need that anymore because God's called me to something different. And he used that money that he was saving for life savings to get through Bible college and to finish his training. And he gave up everything, left his family behind to go to a foreign country. First, he went to France. And was out of the country and unable to get back through family sicknesses and different needs. And eventually ended up in Africa as one of our missionaries that we support today. And he's gone through heartache and tragedy just like you and I do, but he's unable to get back when he loses a loved one in death. You see, he just gave that up. And we can't comprehend that. He's had to learn a different culture, a different language, a different way of living. And he's just a missionary, some would say. And I say, well, they're just a veteran. They're just a pioneer. And until you know someone personally, it's hard to imagine where they are and the heartache, the grief that they've gone through. He's had his life threatened a number of times on the mission field, been attacked with a machete, almost lost his arm in that attack. He's been to our church a number of times. In fact, he's in the States right now. We weren't able to schedule him because he's just here for a short time. I'm going to go see him hopefully soon here before he goes back to the country that God's called. And by the way, God's calling's bigger than any dreams that we have. And a true servant of God's willing to put aside all, just like a veteran's willing to put aside all his desires for his country. He's serving a bigger cause. And he's doing a great work for God and going from village to village and establishing churches in these villages where most of us wouldn't want to visit, let alone live there. And that's what he's called home. He'll tell you experiences that'll cause you to maybe lose your lunch. When you know what they live like on a daily basis. But it's just become a part of his life. And plan on living and dying the rest of their life as long as God gives them health enough to keep going. And they've got a little grandbaby and a son that's back in the States, and they get to see them every few years. And we can't understand the sacrifice, but I'm grateful for people like this. And by the way, their sacrifice is nothing compared to folks that I read about in history. And we can't even comprehend. But I look at all these
people, the abused and the less fortunate, the visionaries, the warriors, the pioneers, the preachers. I think what America was made great by all these people, and I don't want to take anything away from any of them, and I could never compare myself to even come close to matching the things that I see in any of these. But these great and influential people realize one thing that we've forgotten in modern America, that life is bigger than myself. Did you catch that? There's some things that are much bigger than myself. It's not about what I think or what I feel, what I believe, what I do. What does this book say? The Apostle Paul talked much about sports and warriors on the battlefield. He says, a soldier of Christ. He cares not for the comforts. I'm trying to paraphrase because I can't think of the... He entangles not himself with the affairs of this life. He's not concerned about the comforts and the things that are important. It's not his. He's not serving himself. He's serving a bigger cause. And that's what it takes. If we're going to have a revival in America, it's going to be when God's people realize there's a bigger cause than me. And when we understand there's a bigger cause than me, I'll gladly give my life for that cause. Hello? And my little feelings won't get hurt when somebody says something that upsets my little apple cart. And there's something bigger than myself. And I'm grateful to be an American. Grateful for holidays like this where we recognize one part that made America great. I'm grateful for the warriors as we honor this weekend. But I'm also grateful for the pioneers, for the preachers, for the visionaries, and for the abused and less fortunate that have made us what we are today. And all of them have this one thing in common, that there's something bigger than us. And we of all people as Christians ought to realize there's something bigger than us, and that's Jesus Christ. He's our Savior. He's the one worth living for and dying for. And he's our cause. I'm asking.